runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 81 with guest Sean Creamer, recorded Thursday, October 16th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
That's me.
Sir, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Great. And odds are, when people are listening to the show, we are not home.
Or at least you're not home.
Well, yeah, it might be PDC, might be Dev Connections, might be Tech Ed. This is the season of much travel.
That's right. It's confusing enough just thinking about where we have to travel when, but when you start adding in time-shifted shows and trying to map those up in your brain, it gets really confusing, doesn't it?
Well, what I'm excited about is when we're together, of course, we get an opportunity to do a bunch of shows in person, sometimes with an audience, sometimes in private, but I like those face-to-face shows. They're a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, you know, it's a ton of fun doing the shows the way that we usually do it, which is, you know, I have my little studio space in my home office, you have your studio space, and we're talking to somebody.
Somewhere.
Typically over the phone, right, the kind of thing. Or over the net, the face-to-face it's really cool to be able to sit there and have that type of interaction too, and then share that with the people that listen to our show.
And that whole live feel of the buzz of the conference, those shows are interesting too. I'm looking forward to the interviews we're going to get.
We always worry about the background noise, don't we? But then it ends up, I actually kind of like it a little bit.
Absolutely.
It feels a little different and the conversations seem to always turn out really to be really, really interesting.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun. I think we're going to get a lot of shows. So between Barcelona and Dev Connections, lots and lots of interesting people to talk to.
Yep. And of course, in Barcelona, we've got Speaker Idol going on and a bunch of other stuff. And so anybody who's listening, if you'll be at the Tech Ed IT week or the IT Forum week in Barcelona at the EMEA conference, then be sure to stop by and say hi. We'd be glad to see you.
Yeah, we're right in the middle of the vendor floor at the community stage. All right, let's introduce our guest. Shane Creamer started working with Windows in the early 1990s. He's worked at Microsoft since 1995 and currently works in the Microsoft Premier Field Engineering as a performance and debug engineer. He's filled past roles as a customer advocate, program manager, and was an extended part of the operating system team that helped ship Windows 2000 way back when. Shane's passion has been serving as a customer advocate to help the Microsoft community self-identify and self-solve many of the typical stability and performance issues that occur in the murky gray world known as performance analysis.
Very murky and gray, huh?
Since a dummy's guide to using PerfMon effectively does not exist, Shane has been creating the Vital Signs workshop, which takes premier customers on a three-day experience where they learn the proper use of the performance analysis tools like Performance Monitor and Server Performance Advisor, and the 25 counters that are on the must-know list of counters needed to be properly addressed performance and stability issues, regardless of what role that server has or what process it's running. This workshop has been delivered to over 250 customers worldwide. Shane's hobbies are home theaters, exercising, health, doing charitable work, helping parents of autistic children on the ASD spectrum, and his son is one of them on the spectrum, and he's trained as an emotional counselor. That's got to come in handy for performance problems. Helping people and couples rebuild their lives when he isn't rebuilding server performance. Currently lives in Eastern Washington, loves spending time with his family and watching his son become more and more functional each month thanks to the latest ASD spectrum research. And Shane can be reached at shaneC@microsoft.com. Welcome, Shane Creamer.
Hey, Shane.
That's quite an intro, actually.
That's a very cool intro.
Yeah, some challenging parts of your life, no two ways about it. Server performance is the easy part, I imagine.
You know, I like helping people, and it's one of the reasons why I left the product group and decided to come back over to the support side of the house, because one of the things you can learn to be is a teaching surgeon.
Absolutely.
And I just love it.
And you know, an interesting part, I think a lot of folks don't understand the sophistication level of the support available from Microsoft.
That's terrific stuff.
It's just not phone calls anymore.
No, sir.
I know I've leveraged Microsoft Premier support in some pretty hairy situations and also in some terrific learning situations similar to what you do. You know, whether it's going someplace to get that information, or if it's on the phone, or if it's Premier Support coming to our location to present it. It's always been, and a lot of people don't even realize it's available, but there's a lot of great content and a lot of very, very smart people with terrific knowledge to tap into.
You know, I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the things that I tell my customers every time I engage someone, and it's the same with you, and that is there are brilliant people on both sides of the phone. And the idea is simply, you know, to instead of looking across the table at each other, you know, to kind of look down the road together and say, you know, let's go where the data leads us. You know, right. You've got extreme knowledge of the environment. I have some good tools. Let's put it to use and let's see where we can go for the fix.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I guess maybe a quick question before we jump into our topic for today. If people are not very aware, business people are not very aware of what's available to them in that Premier Support area or other areas, who's the right person for them to contact at Microsoft? Who's their point person to get more information and to find out what they can take advantage of?
You know, there's going to be, there's two layers to that answer. The first one is going to sound really good. The second one is going to be like, I'm going to have to find out. if a customer has some kind of an engagement scenario already, you know, like they have the professional level support, they have a Premier agreement, then they'll right. have whenever they join that contract with Microsoft and support relationship, they're made aware of a key contact that they can use and leverage. If we're talking about a customer out there is like, you know, I have a certain number of machines in my environment, and I have no support relationship with Microsoft.
Right.
I'd be interested in getting one. You know, honestly, to my embarrassment, I don't know. But you know something? I'm willing to find out because that's a good question. What if I had a company and I my business has been growing pretty well, and suddenly I realize I could use a support relationship. You know, to my embarrassment, I don't know.
If I have a support relationship, it's probably going to be my technical account manager or somebody that I
yes.
would call to do that kind of thing. Or maybe if not, then maybe the local office or local sales office is a good place to start. But yeah, that would be, in fact, I think Richard would be interesting just to have a conversation about, you know, resources available to customers. That might even be a great show to do someday.
Absolutely. But we only got a half hour today, and I know
not
we
today,
want to drill
yeah.
into this pretty deeply. So this is a workshop. You've been doing a workshop around performance analysis and PerfMon and so forth?
That's correct. It started off, so this is, you know, around 2004. One of the things that I tend to find is, in fact, this might surprise you, but one of the things we do at Microsoft is every time we reach closure, in other words, we talk to our customer and we say, have we you know, achieved root cause? Have we, you know, gotten you a solution, whether it's a bug fix or a workaround, you know, that you agree that this issue is resolved, this fire is put out? And when they say yes, we can actually code the issue. So we have basically kind of a call coding tree, much like, you know, kind of like your file folder structure in Windows.
Right.
We might have a folder and then folder one, folder two, folder three underneath it. And so, for example, what if the issue was the OS? And under the OS, we say it was a kernel pool. It's not just a kernel pool, it was kernel pool paged. Under kernel pool paged, it was a third-party driver that leaked it, basically, you know, bled the pool dry. So when you run hundreds of thousands of calls through that, you get a very accurate picture, you know, highly accurate picture of what customers are escalating to us.
Right.
Now, obviously, many, many intelligent people like you can stomp out the day-to-day issues. So what we tend to see are the nasty of the nasties that are escalated to us, as it should be. And what we tend to find is, what if I told you that 50% of all support calls as of October 2007 that come into Microsoft are actually storage issues. They're issues with their disk subsystem.
Wow.
Which means, in a sense, we are, and this doesn't bother us at all, but, you know, 50% of our calls, basically, where we're acting as frontline support, you could almost assert, you know, for storage vendors. And that's okay, because customers say their server is slow. You know, they want to talk to Microsoft because it's the logical place to start.
Right.
Especially if you've got a good engineer. And so one of the things that I do for the customers that I engage with is, as a performance and debug engineer, I say, if your server is slow, let's take a look. And so PerfMon is one of the tools that, unfortunately, you know, it's kind of there in the 90s. And I think, you know, as we hit the 21st century, a lot of people, including myself, you know, as your experience grows, you prefer the deeper tools. And so sometimes, you know, PerfMon kind of gets set on the shelf as kind of this tool that was kind of there, kind of effective, kind of not. And what we really wanted to do is make sure that customers know, in the hands of somebody that's been properly trained, this book pulls out some amazing details without having to crawl inside of a process and create a log that's gigabytes in size.
Right.
Sure. So operative words there, properly trained, right? It is kind of Greek until you really know what you're looking at.
Agreed.
And I find lots of folks that are very frustrated with PerfMon that they don't know. It's like your own little internet. Everything you want to find is in there. You just don't know where it is.
And to my embarrassment, I mean, when you love your company, You know, and I don't mean just drink the Kool-Aid to drink the Kool-Aid, but I mean, you know, when you find that you're part of a company that tries to do really good things, especially the engineering group. I mean, the dev teams do great stuff, but sometimes, you know, it's a hit or miss with the right features, you know, and one of the things that we tend to find is usability is really tough to get in front of, you know, developers, you know, insisting on, you know, shipping a product. And, right. And you know, all companies need to ship a product, so I don't want to cast, you know, I don't want there to be a hint of aspersion, but for example, Perfmon. Where is the Dummy's Guide to Perfmon?
Yeah.
Here's this tool.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you look, ironically enough, if you step back and think and look at all the Perfmon articles that are out there, and even look in the ResKit documentation we create, there is a built-in assumption that you already know what you're doing.
Yes.
And so one of the things that I love to do is take very intelligent people, you know, that have deep skills in SQL and Exchange and IIS and certificate services and Active Directory, and take them. We take the first day. The first day is just basically introducing them to the tool and how to use it right. And to watch these people go from junior woodchucks to Jedi Padawan learners to Jedi masters in a couple of weeks is awesome. I love getting the emails where they say, Shane, we had this issue that was plaguing for 6 months. Thanks to your workshop. Here's my analysis. Here's a screenshot of it. What do you think? And I just rubber stamp it. I go, I couldn't have done a better job myself.
So one of the things with Perfmon is that it's very, very visual, right? So part of what we're doing today is you are going to be, as we're talking, sharing a screen with us, which we will then make available to our viewers to also be able to view, to take a look at as you go through it. So there is no dummies, yellow dummies guide, if you will, trademark, and it's probably a trademark of some company that I should say right now. But your class that you've taught to so many premier customers and other customers really is sort of that, what does it take to really make it work for you, correct?
It is a heroic attempt to fill that space until that book becomes available. Yes.
Well, the reviews I've heard have been terrific, so we're looking forward to jumping into it.
Okay, so at this point, would you like me to go ahead and take your listeners on a little bit of a journey about good Perfmon techniques?
Absolutely.
Okay, so for the listeners on the radio, what we have in front of us here is Perfmon, and we're using there's two classes of Perfmon. There's the Windows 2000, you know, Windows XP Server 2003 version of Perfmon, and then there's the Windows Server 2008. And Vista version of Perfmon, which is what I have on the screen today. And one of the benefits about it, if you've ever been in Perfmon, is on the bottom of the screen, you've got the timestamps built in. You can hover your mouse over something and get some real-time information. So, for example, if I kind of tooltip this a little bit, notice right there in the screen, I can see right now that value is 4. There's no more guessing. And one of the things that if anybody's used Perfmon, it's both an art and a science.
Sure.
And what we look for is relationships. So right off the get-go, we tend to tell our... So I'm going to really focus on the top potholes that we see people using Perfmon, good intelligent people using Perfmon, having a go at it without much training, tend to make. And so that's my goal today, is to make sure they steer clear of that if possible. So anytime you look at the bottom of the graph where I have my mouse right now, there's values. There's minimum and there's maximum values and there's an average.
Right.
And one of the things we try to tell our customers right off the get-go is you focus on the minimums and the maximums. If you have, a 3-day capture, where you've got some line at the very bottom of the graph and it's really doing nothing. Say it's disk transfers per second. We're really doing nothing on the disk. And then for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, we do, you know, 3 to 4, you know, minutes of heavy, heavy disk transfer to the point to where we see massive latency. It doesn't do any good to quote an average there, because what we care about is that 5 or 10 minutes where, you know, like an Exchange server servicing 5,000 mailboxes was just simply unresponsive.
Yeah, it was just paralyzed under the load. It's only those, in the end, it's always peak moments that matter.
Yep.
Exactly. So the first thing that we always try to tell our students is focus on the peaks and the valleys. You know, the averages will take care of themselves, because most people can kind of, you know, eyeball, you know, I mean, if you look at your checkbook, you know, and you put your check in and then you slowly imagine it dwindling, you know, you can kind of in your mind kind of imagine a graph. So we're pretty good as human beings at coming up with our own, you know, mental averages. It's the peaks and the troughs really where the action is. And the second part of that is to give peaks and troughs context. You know, we always want to make sure we know what time the issue occurred. So what I have here is this is an Active Directory domain controller that was escalated to Microsoft as a very high priority. Now, this customer, intelligent, but they had really no Perfmon experience. So most of us can go into Task Manager and see what our CPU utilization is, but how many people are really willing to stare at it for, you know, hours to days? So obviously we need to record that, so that we have a running log of what's occurring. What you see here is at the very time, they reported this problem around 8:40, and they were part of this problem around 8:50. For a couple of minutes, the server went offline. So what I'm going to do here in in the Perfmon 2.0, what I like to call, which is, you know, Vista and Server 2008 Perfmon, you can take a counter here, right-click it, and choose scale. And ka-ding, it automatically scales for you, which is huge time savings. Because the second problem is that if you're going to look at a number in the graph, having it in the middle of the graph is important. If it's too squished down, it looks benign. And if it's, you know, so high that, you know, as a graph of 0, 100, it's slammed against the top, you really can't see what's going on. And so here we have this, so for the listeners that are just listening to the audio portion only, what you have here is at the very time that the help desk staff report there's an issue, we can see the memory goes from about 424 megs all the way down to zero. So
that's really bad.
Help desk,
that's
really
the available
bad.
Memory, right? Yeah.
And so not only that, but one of the things we can see here, because we have the graph appropriately, is there's this nasty little downward trend here. And that's kind of indicative. When you have unremittent allocation and no deallocation or releasing of resources, you know, we start to, those of us who have been in the, you know, the perfmon business as well, start to sniff a leak line.
Now, we're looking at a line that's of available memory that's gradually going down. That can't be good.
Yep.
That can't be good. Now, the next thing that's a perfect lead-in is the next thing we want to look at is, we always tell our perfmon users, our perfmon students, to keep an eye on duration. Now, notice this is between 8:26 a.m. in the graph for now and 9:02. This is a 36-minute capture. So one could assert that this could simply be, you know, as the peak user load comes on, naturally resources are going to decline because, you know, Active Directory or Exchange or any product is going to allocate more resources to satisify the needs of the users. So
right.
If this is a two-day capture, we might see it come back up. So the idea is that we let duration be our friend to say, do I have like a two-day capture here where I can see the rise and fall of what the server really looks like, or am I just looking at just enough of the graph where I could theoretically be head faked into thinking it's something that it isn't? So we let duration be our friend.
Right.
Right, right.
When you talk about taking a recording for 2 days, am I just saving this to disk? What's the correct way to save this out? Just as a file? Do I use the SQL Server option? Does any of that matter?
You know, it's an excellent question. So what we're talking about when we talk about saving something out to disk is, you fire up Perfmon and you start a capture. And obviously in Perfmon, you can create something called a template where, kind of like ordering food at a restaurant, you know, you look at the menu and you can select counters that you want to record. And by recording those counters, you can choose then where you want to save it. And so for those, and I'm obviously saying this for those that, you know, like kind of looking at Perfmon for the first time, really, you can choose objects. So just to give an example here on the screen, I have lots of objects here that were recorded, you know, on this server. Memory, logical disk, and so we can choose objects, and then we can have the server record those at an interval. Typically, we use 5 minutes, and if you use the right counters, we don't grab big objects like the thread object and so these developer objects, you can make a Perfmon sample, like every 5 minutes, only grab 64 to 128K of data. So if you're grabbing every 5 minutes, you know, you can have a capture run for a couple of weeks and be less than 50 megs.
Nice.
Sure.
What about the observer effect? How much impact does Perfmon have on the machine that you're observing?
Excellent question. The Heisenberg uncertainty principle, you know, right. By looking at it, do we induce more load? And the good news is that, well, there's good and bad news. See, Perfmon has, like you said, it's like the internet. I have everything I want there. If you're a developer and you're looking at your application threads, you're going to use the thread object. But the thread object, if you've got 244,000 threads running on an active 64-bit server, just running the thread object means you're capturing data about all 244,000 threads, so you just turn Perfmon into SQL Server.
Yeah.
Wow.
But on the other hand, one of the things that we teach is there's about 25 counters that are like the counters that development uses, that we use at Microsoft. You know, they're like the key counters. You know, it's kind of like building a house. It's your foundation. You can add other counters to it, but you never want to leave these behind.
Right.
And with those 25 counters, you're talking about a less than a 1% hit to a CPU at the time of sample and about 64 to 128K of data per sample interval. So you could argue that a P2400 from the 20th century, you know, with 500 megs of RAM, you know, running, you know, some web page could easily handle that. And if a server that old can handle it, obviously, you know, our modern 21st century, you know, 2000 through 2008 hardware can handle it without a hitch, properly tuned.
I've heard the mention of these 25 great counters.
And 10 great ones for IT and 25 for dev. Is that what I heard too?
You know, it's 25 that we use for everybody. So whether you're in development or you're, you know, an IT professional, you know, managing a server environment, there are some counters that we have found that are must-haves. And what I've got here in front of us on the screen is kind of an excerpt from the Vital Signs workshop. And what these are the counters and the numbers. And one of the things that I'm going to do here is that I want to make that PDF. That PDF is publicly available. In other words, any customer is allowed to have this document. So you guys have the PDF. You're welcome to share it with the presentation, because we want everybody. We want to create card-carrying members of the Perfmon Army.
You bet.
And so to do that, we need to equip our soldiers.
Yeah, so we'll definitely provide a link to this PDF file so that everybody can get a good look at this.
Because it's got the thresholds and it's got the counters, and that's what we really need, right? We want to know what the counters are and what are some fairly crisp thresholds that we can leverage so that we know if something crosses this, then, you know, the environment is manually inducing latency on top of, you know, a critical application.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the challenges for folks that are going into Perfmon new is just not, okay, I found a number that seems to be meaningful. It moves in relation to my problem, what's good and what's bad. So
exactly.
You know, you're talking about anything under 50% idle time on the physical disk is a concern. Now we start watching that.
Right. And percent idle basically is our favorite version of average or current disk queue length.
Rather than looking, because you can look at the disk queue length directly, right?
Well, you can and you can't. One of the things that we also talk about in the workshop is that there are most of these Perfmon counters were created in the 90s when everything was direct attached to the server.
Right.
Seriously, I mean, Dave Cutler and his team did a fantastic, I mean, it blows my mind to realize that, you know, the counters that I use today were created, you know, back in NT3.1, these counters were around.
Right.
So that's pretty thoughtful foresight. I mean, you know, when he created VAX and VMS, I mean, when we hired him, you know, we didn't mess around. We got the right guy.
Yeah, got the guy.
And that, yeah. And so these counters are still useful today, but some of them we've had to retire. For example, percent disk time. Percent disk time is a value that where you're supposed to know the exclusive number of dedicated hard disks. So if you've got a value of 666, if you don't know how many exclusively dedicated hard drives you have to divide that so that you get a number between 0 and 100, you can't do the math.
Right.
So that's the other thing is that why I really have this burden, you know, for our larger Microsoft IT community out there is to, you know, here's the counters that are useful. There are other counters that, you know, you can kind of lay on top of this like a tapestry, but these are the ones that work, you know, that we use all the time. So the kind of the king of disk, as far as we're concerned, is average disk second, read or write. You know, that's very much like a sand person, you know, taking a look in the back of the sand frame, which is, you know, what is the raw latency to and from, you know, the disks.
Right. And it doesn't matter whether they are direct attached storage, going through some kind of RAID controller, or going or iSCSI or some LUN-based SAN, that number's still meaningful.
That's right. If Wile E. Coyote falls off the cliff, it doesn't matter, you know, if he falls off by a foot or 100 feet. And that's the good news, that most of these are precipices. For example, if I was to, so for those of you that are going to, you know, hearing the radio show that might be tempted, look at the video. What I'm doing is I'm scrolling down to the memory object, which is really kernel memory. And one of the things we tend to find here is that, you know, free system page table entries. You know, if you go underneath, you know, 5,000 page table entries, that's when, you know, a server will start to go really dumb. It'll go unresponsive. It'll throw some really weird errors. You know, if you know, it's like if your checking account runs out of ledger, you know, in your checks, and yet you keep writing checks, you lose track of who you've given your resources to, and the OS has the same problem.
Right. So once you're running low, that's, again, I got to think, a great gauge, no matter what you're running, of just, is this machine sick?
That's right. And that's why we coined the very corny, you know, the very corny phrase vital signs, because when you walk into a doctor's office and you're not feeling well, the first thing they want to check are the vitals.
Yeah.
Because that could give them a huge clue.
What about generally free memory? You know, it's available megabytes.
You know, available megabytes, what we have here is, so most people understand if you've got 2 gigs free, your server's doing pretty good.
Right.
The questions start to come, what happens when my server has 100 megs free or 250 megs free? And that's really where we have, you know, we have two positions. One is, it is theoretically possible to run Vista on a you know, 1998-era P2 400 laptop with 256 or 512 megs of RAM. You
right.
might not enjoy the experience, but it will functionally, you know, come up for you. And we tend to find that's the same thing. Most of the Microsoft white papers, really without saying it, say how much memory is necessary to keep the server alive and out of trouble. So you might see things like, well, at least 10 megabytes free. Well, as we all know, let's say we have an Exchange server or a SQL server, a Big Iron server, even an Oracle server. I mean, something in the Microsoft ecology.
Right.
And it's backup time. And we're now going to back up a 36 terabyte database. 10 megs isn't going to cut it for buffering that. And that's the difference between backing up in 2 hours and backing up in 20.
Yeah.
So the idea there is that that's why our ratio is that, hey, if you've got 20, if you've got less than 10% of free RAM available, you know, that can be a warning. And that applies even to a 64 gig server. Let's say you have a 64 gig server and it's running SQL and SQL has taken 60 gigs of it because SQL can pin its memory. That leaves 6 gigs for the OS. So here comes a 36 terabyte database that we're going to back up. The OS will use every byte available, you know, as kind of, you know, buffering, you know, the file IO activity so you can get maximum throughput out of your disk. So in that case, you know, you really want, you wouldn't want your server to have under, you know, 6 gigs free.
Right.
Even though 6 gigs is a big number, throw big data at it and the OS will take it and go, I need all of it.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. It's not just the actual number, but the percentage of overall memory.
Absolutely. And so what we try to say is that there's, you know, most of our white papers out there are good white papers. And what they're really trying to communicate is what's necessary to keep the patient alive, not to, you know, not to make a dragster. And I think most of us don't want to just keep the server alive. We really want the server, you know, to run very fast, as fast
right.
as it can.
Right.
And so there's kind of a performance setting. So that's where we really talk about having like a gig or two or more free. You know, at the time where you're going to do a big IO operation. And then, of course, there's the minimum bar, which is what's necessary to keep the server alive. If I put you underneath the water and I give you a straw, depending on the width of the straw is whether or not you will be able to breathe or slowly asphyxiate.
Yes. You're still alive, but you are going down. let's keep moving along here. Beyond memory, I mean, there's lots of different values here. We talked a little bit about disk, talked a little about memory. What about processor? How important is processor in this?
You know, processor, an interesting thing occurred. Now, this is where we're going to run just a little bit geeky. But I figured geeks like your show. I'm a geek, and I looked at some of the authors and some of the people you've interviewed, and it's like fantastic. So, you know, if they can geek, I can geek. So I'm spinning my propeller hat as we speak. But I'm bumped.
Right.
So what we have here with processors is in Server 2003, an interesting change was made at the kernel level. And this is where, once again, Landy Wang and Dave Cutler and a lot of the guys at the base OS team, you know, some of the coolest stuff we do never gets advertised. I mean, you know, where's the advertisement that, you know, hey, guess what we've done in kernel? I mean, that just doesn't quite play to the average,
yeah.
you know, storefront, you know, sign. But for those of us in the IT community, some of these changes are huge. And they're, you know, they should have like IT geek. You know, signs. Guess what? In kernel, we now make processor time, you know, less worrisome than it was before. Hey, that's a feature I'm interested in. You know, and I think
Absolutely.
Most of your community would. So in Windows 2000, NT4, one of the things we always wanted to see was if you had, say, four processors, you wanted to see all four processors, you know, running at the same level, right? You wanted to see the load evenly dispersed.
Even though we pretty much knew that couldn't happen. That's what really what we wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just, given workloads run on given processors, and sometimes some of them are rougher than others. But yeah, what frustrates you is I've got four cores, I've got eight cores, two of them are pinned and the rest are sleeping.
And why is that?
Yeah, why is that?
And here comes the answer. So in Windows 2000 and NT4, 3.5, 3.5.1, you know, it was very important that the system, you know, the thread manager basically did is it looked at it and said, okay, you know, I want to make sure that all threads are getting evenly dispersed across all the processors because we thought at the time that was a good thing. Well, the base OS team, which is like your deep, deep guys, you know, the guys that work at the HAL, these are the guys that know, like, you know, breathe assembly for a living. You know, it's kind of like the Matrix. You know, do you always look at things in code? Raw?
Right,
absolutely. Right.
Right.
These are the same people.
Right.
So they're like half human, half cyborg, right? You have to look in their eyes to know whether or not you're talking to a computer at that moment or you're talking to a person. So
yeah, give them time to come out of it.
They're the best of the best. You know, I need a human response here, right? Don't give me an assembly language dump. And what they did is they realized they got really close in the hardware. So they worked with the guys at AMD and Intel, and they realized that, you know, a thread is kind of like the atomic coin of the realm, right? That's the smallest unit of work that, you know, the OS will do is
yes.
operate on, you know, a thread. A thread has some instructions. We call function calls, some registers, punches them in the CPU and says, run me. what we found is that if you move a thread from one CPU to another, there's this hidden secret on hardware called the Mezi bus. And it's kind of Mezi, haha.
Nice.
But what happens is that, say you have two processors. If you move that thread from processor 1 to processor 2, it has to stop both processors because you have to copy over the L1 cache, you have to copy over the L2 cache. So the more processors you have, the worse it is to context switch. So if you've got 16 processors, all 16 processors have to stop if CPU 1 wants to transfer its thread to CPU 7. And so that's kind of like the hidden secret. And so so the more CPUs they have, the more horrendous the overhead becomes. And so we realize, wow, now that we're moving into multiple cores, this is going to kill customers and this is going to kill productivity. I mean, your CPUs are busy, but yet they're not doing as much as they could. So what they decided to do is that the OS determines, you know, if this thread really likes to run here on this CPU, unless the CPU is 80 or 90% busy, I'm not going to move it, because in the multi-core environment, it's actually better to have like 3 or 4 CPUs busy and 3 or 4 CPUs not, because it saves on ring transitions.
Right.
And it saves all this time. And so there are some hidden reasons that, you know, actually that makes a good decision. Now, in other words, it's actually better for you to have your CPUs running at different rates.
Very interesting.
I remember reading about this and being excited about it, so I guess I qualify as a geek too.
Awesome. Well, you know, I mean, you guys are obviously, when I read your descriptions, you guys are, you know, geeks deluxe. So, you know, I'm an aspiring geek. So knowing that my information is welcome and I'm in good company makes me feel good. Makes me feel like I'm on the right path.
The Perfmon Ninja is an aspiring geek. That's cool.
Nice.
That's right. So obviously percent processor becomes important, but it's not so important now that, you know, especially in the area of multi-core. So if we see a couple CPUs that are rather busy, and let's not forget about driver affinity. You know, one of the things that has been around for years is, you know, HP and Dell and Emulex, the people that make, you know, disk controllers, HBA controllers. For those who are like, what's an HBA? There goes Microsoft not defining an acronym again.
Yeah.
It's basically this SCSI controller for the SAN.
Right.
Post-bus, you know, adapter.
It's kind of half ATM network card and half SCSI controller. And what they do is they write their drivers to take advantage of the last two CPUs, the last one or two CPUs, because they know the OS wants to run most of the application threads on the first couple of CPUs. So percent processor is important to understand the relationship. But, you know, as long as we don't see a CPU tapped out at 90% or more, you know, that's important. The other part I'd like to bring in there is that, you know, there's two more counters that we're going to be adding to this document, which is percent privilege time, which represents kernel mode, and percent user time, which represents user mode. So
right.
What does that have to do with anything? Good question. What it means is what if I have an application like SQL or Exchange or IIS, and I see my CPU at 50%, and I see 80% of its user mode and 20% of its kernel? Well, what happens if all of a sudden I see my CPU at 100% and 99% of its kernel? What that tells an IT professional that something has gone wrong. Something is spin locking in kernel, because that's not how my server usually looks. And so we can look for patterns of behavior.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that not to get off topic, but just comes to mind that I'm thinking of as we're talking right now is this is, first of all, this is terrific and great information. And it's very cool that you can basically, tell me if I'm wrong, save a template, which you can then reuse in Performance Monitor to do the same type of analysis over and over again, right?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things we teach in the workshop that, you know, like I said, if you guys like this kind of information, we can make this kind of like a little weekly show. Like, we'll talk about, you know, disk at some point, best, you know, tips on disk, best tips on, you know, processor and user mode and whatnot. But yes, we can actually talk about, you know, performance monitor fundamentals, which is, you know, how to take a bunch of counters, save it out as a template, and then script it out where you can punch that in to 100 other servers. Not only that, but how about creating a black box catcher that's always running, even if the server blue screens or it has to get rebooted because it's Security Patch Tuesday? How about always having Perfmon data? Because one of the things we all know is, how many times has a server had an issue and we have to say, do we have any data? No? Well, then we're going to have to set up a capture. How about always having something running 250, maybe 500 megs in size? It's circular, like an event log, so that if the wire ever trips, if the alarm ever trips, we've got data right there. And those are things we'd love to teach, you know, your users out there how to do.
That's interesting, because that's kind of where I was going, was how can we make this a little more modular and a little more automatic? And certainly the templating is a great way, but that you're hitting the nail right on the head, the nail that I was thinking of. in a bad metaphor.
Absolutely. And like I said, so, you know, sure, this is a 3-day workshop, but there's pieces here I'd like everybody to know.
Absolutely.
And so
sure.
Maybe
absolutely. We need to do
out.
More shows.
Yeah.
More shows. Good. We need to do a perf mod series. It's just such a huge topic. You know, we stepped on this or stepped into this with Stephen Choi a month ago or so.
And yes, great
just,
guy. Great
yeah,
guy.
Just to realize, also part of the premier support team, and just sort of realize this is such a huge topic. So I think we got to get some feedback from the listeners. Do we need to dive deeper into this? I think we've given them some key ingredients, maybe a little video here to see a bit of what's going on. The PDF file, the key, the sort of key measures, and we haven't even gotten through all this network interface. There's some other, you know, important bits of, you know, of the what you've got to measure on every machine. It's going to be a challenge to see how can we break this down into the individual elements. I think we could just sit and spend a half an hour on disk access, and what to measure and why, what good ones look like and bad.
You're right, though, at the beginning of the show, you know, trying to develop the Perfmon army. This is all information that people can use now, but also could have been using for the past many, many years. And there's really it's a pretty small percentage of folks out there that really know how to use Perfmon.
And it shouldn't have to be that way.
Yeah. I think it's a big, great idea and interesting to teach. Maybe you could just go over the fundamentals of, so I want to leave Perfmon running on my servers all the time, but not kill myself. And I now have this PDF file in my hand, so I know what I should be measuring. It's always frustrating to me that we have a failure and that's when we go instrument and then wait for the next failure. So I want to be able to have that instrumentation ahead of time. What's the trick to having it start on boot and always be running?
Well, let me bring up a little something here from the workshop. So if I come and bring up, I go in the student and I go into module 3 Perfmon techniques. Now what I'm doing here is I'm bringing up a PDF from the training. So this will be on the video for those of you, but otherwise we'll do our very best to make sure we describe this as a word picture for the folks that are listening. So what we essentially do, it involves two things. One is using Logman. So Logman is kind of the Perfmon of, you know, for command line. So
right.
If you want to do something in Perfmon, you know, command line version, you're going to use what's called Logman. And so what we really do here is we use Logman, and there's kind of I'll kind of rattle it off, but obviously, you know, those of you on the radio either have to, you know, kind of type this along with me, or naturally you'll want to pick up the video. But, for example, use logman.exe, and then what? We're going to use the create option. What would you like to create? I'd like to create a counter capture. What would you like to call it? We'll call it black box, much like the airport. You know, the airplanes fly in the air. We have a black box.
Right.
What would you like to use? We'll use the dash V because we want to append like the month, month, day, day, hour, hour, minute, minute. So that's an MMDDHHMM. And then what's really cool is you can take all the counters that you want to use, put them in a text file. I happen to call it counters.txt. And if you use the dash CF switch, it'll pull those counters. And then you can use a dash SI, which is what's my sample interval. And then what would you like? What's the format? The format is I'd like to be binary circular so it doesn't run away with my hard drive.
Right.
What would you like the output to be? I'd like the output to be /blackblocks_%computer name. And what's so slick about that is what if I have 100 servers and 2 weeks from next Tuesday, server 77 and server 25, you know, have these issues? No problem. You know, I copy them to my computer, but I've got 2 black box captures, right? How do I distinguish them? Well, they'll have the computer name at the end of it, like server 77, and it'll have the month, month, day, day, hour, minute, minute timestamp. So I know which capture. If I've got 20 captures in there, I know which one I need to look at.
Nice.
And last but not least is we use the dash max switch, and we set it for 250 megabytes. And so that creates, that's something you can script out to, you know, hundreds of machines, have it go punch it in. Next thing you know, you go into Perfmon, and there's the template. And then you simply use a logman start script to go out to your machines with a dash S, you know, dash S, whack, whack, server 1, you know, semicolon, whack, whack, server 2. Maybe you want to get a little fancy. Use like percent server name percent, you know, and create a separate text file in a forenext loop. So you can punch it in that way. There's lots of techniques to use a logman start, and then you can start all these captures out there. Or for the black box, what you do is you use basically a startup script, and your startup script has something maybe called like blackboxstart.bat.
Yep.
And it has one line in there, logman-start blackbox. So whether or not you want to deploy it via group policy to all your machines, very handy. But what if you're just trying this for the first time? You don't want to ask your group policy guys to do this just yet because it's kind of like your private test. Then just modify the local computer policy. And then, wow, shazam, every time the server reboots, as soon as the performance logs and alert service comes back up, the startup script comes up afterwards. It starts up the black box capture, and we've got customers like Intel, DHL, Disney, Wells Fargo, you know, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, big customers that just love this workshop. And some of them have had it 7 or 8 times because they want all their IT teams. You know, one IT team gets it, they start reducing their issues. You know, the time of reactive issues and the time to closure starts going down. The other team's like, hey,
I want that. That's awesome.
One of the things ultimately I think we're going to have to do is I'm really hoping that, you know, eventually a tech debt guy who writes books for a living, you know, picks us up and goes, Shane, how would you and I like to partner together and get this book out to the rest of the world? And it's like, I'd love to. That would be my dream, that people could download a book, you know, download or buy a book, you know, that takes them through chapter by chapter in a kind of a, I think it's awesome, the Dummy's Guide format. I mean, I've read Dummy's Guide to Fishing. Because my son is 6 and he wants to go fishing. It's like, I don't fish much. So I'm like, I've got the Dummy's Guide to Fishing. Great book.
Right.
I'd love something like that for our customers.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the book that needs to exist. We're going to have to figure that out. Shane, we're out of time. We're long, but such good stuff. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. And again, if the listener, you know, responses, hey, we'd love to have some of these topics. I'm here. I mean, they're my customers. I mean, whether I know them or not, I want to help. And so, you know, I'd be glad to help any way I can.
I think it feels like a series. Maybe something we got to insert once a month just to get people up to speed, or maybe a completely separate track to go on. We'll have to work it out.
Richard, Greg, it was a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you.
Likewise. Very good.
And we'll see you next week on Run As Radio.